remedies lately.
Did you buy one of the home remedy books?
No. It's like it's a theory book about like why certain things mix together. Because I've been trying to come up with like my own chili powder, right? My own pomodoro sauce, my own brisket rubs and stuff, instead of having to buy the packets and everything. And so like, but inside this theory is like a lot of things, and like that's why it's one of the things that why they say like these people in the certain Eastern countries that eat a lot of turmeric don't have as much hair and everything. And it's just like, it's all this kind of weird stuff, like looking at genealogically and geographically why people of certain areas like don't grow facial hair at all, for instance, right? Or and it has to do with diet and what they eat. And so it's really kind of fascinating science.
So it's all turmeric related.
Well, it wasn't all turmeric related, but some of it's related to jungle living and things like that.
For the no hair or for the diet aspect?
Pretty much everything. Yeah.
So people in the jungle.
I'm really cracking up at jungle living. I don't know why this has really cracked me up, though.
So it's like South America, Central America, and Sasquatch. Yeah, Sasquatches have hair. They live in, the forest, so that's not quite a jungle.
The turmeric from the rainforest, I'm saying the rainforest, it's not really the rainforest, but, when I was in Jamaica, I told you the Rastafarian thing.
Oh, we did have this discussion, yeah.
Yeah, it was like he was real big on the turmeric. There's lots of good health benefits there.
Did the Rastafarian, did he give any other remedies that maybe would make a good chili powder or salsa?
Turmeric was the most, the biggest thing. I think, honestly, the funniest part of the whole thing is there were three of us. It was me and my friend Corey and this lady who was out to save the man and bring him to Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. So, she was really trying to kind of pick an argument about the religion, and he's like, it's not a religion, it's a lifestyle. And it's about eating healthy and using things from the earth, and Rastafarians are typically vegetarians and big on plants, so it's not just weed. And this is what he was trying to explain, and she just was on a mission to shut it down. But so that was the more interesting part.
So he's out here trying to save lives.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
He's like, and we don't have cancer and live a long time, and here's what we do. And she's like, so, what about Jesus? Sorry. It was just an interesting.
And was this just on the tour? Like she got off the boat with you, or?
It wasn't a tour. We were at an all inclusive, and they had a Rastafarian come and set up and give a little talk. But there were only three of us at the talk, and it was just really kind of comical because he kept saying things. She was trying to pick a fight. But it's hard to pick a fight with the Rastafarian, right? Because they're like, peace and love and wants to do healthy things.
She was just trying to make a point. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good.
She wasn't listening.
She tried.
Well, it was good comedy for me.
And it's something at least memorable from the trip. I'm not sure that's what you're supposed to remember from an all-exclusive resort, but it counts.
I guess so.
So, well, we were going through some stories as always. Actually, I think I forgot to hit record. Just putting that out there. Sorry. So don't be too mad at me, Mike.
Wait, which record? Just now or before?
Before.
Oh, the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, man. But
it's all good.
And so at least, so for the event this
round.
Excuse me?
It was a practice round.
It was a practice round. But we won't go over the same stories. There's still other stories. But we will do the announcement of a whiskey event that's coming up in Houston called the Whiskey Affair on February 8th from 6 to 10 on Silver Street Studios. It's hosted by the Texas Monthly, and this is their third annual. It's a party where whiskey tasting meets mixology, food, educational seminars, book signings, and live music. This is the second annual, not the third, and it's on a Thursday instead of a Friday. So hopefully y'all can make it out. It's $95 a ticket. It's a steep price to pay, but it looks like there's going to be a good selection of whiskeys, so you will get your money's worth. And Texas Monthly normally hosts really good stuff.
Live from Wilmington, Central Texas, you are listening to Free Drinks Next Week, still the number one podcast of this address.
Getting rid of the snow on the roads is not an easy task, and local public works departments can use everything from salt to beet juice, and now you can add vodka to the list. Ken Brown is live in Springfield Township where they're laying down the strong stuff. Ken, are you doing any taste tests at all?
No, you don't really want to taste test this, but I can tell you that neighboring townships and cities have reached out to them about what they're doing because it is working so well. Now, I want to be clear. They're not just pouring vodka on the street. This is a vodka byproduct that goes into this ice be gone magic that Springfield Township has invested in. They say it works like magic on the roads.
It's a byproduct of vodka. Many people consider it like a vodka mix. And then we found out that it is the one product that has been approved by the EPA as far as their safe environment program.
The township will rack up a bit of a bar tab paying for the solution that uses a vodka byproduct to clear the roads. Even the company who makes it admits it costs more than ordinary rock salt. But Springfield's Michael Gould says it's actually saving the township money in other places.
The brine and the magic, the solution, actually coats the salt. So it allows drivers to cut down on the amount of salt that they're putting down.
That's less salt for the 10 routes and almost 100 miles of road Springfield Township's responsible for, which Gould says translates to less drive time for his 13 trucks, cutting down on operating costs.
This particular mixture, the salt brine and the ice be gone magic, has a residual effect on the pavement. So once it's applied to the salt and then the salt put down on the road, it actually bonds to the pavement.
The product is said to be less corrosive, pet-friendly, and works in temperatures down to 35 below zero. But Gould admits it has a rather odd downside.
It's got a unique smell to it, I will say that. Some people like it, some people dislike it, but that's the worst of it.
Now, on that smell, it's actually a dark brown solution. Comes out smelling a little bit like a black licorice, but the upside to this is that Springfield Township says they're getting their salt to stretch about 2 to 3 times further because of this solution. Reporting live in Springfield Township, Ken Brown, Fox 19 Now.
That's crazy interesting. Ken, nice job. So now is a good time to download the Fox 19 First Alert weather app. You can access live radar, the hour-by-hour forecast from our meteorologist, plus the latest school closings. And the best part is free.
I'm not sure if y'all are aware. There's been a recent ban on certain magazines in a prison. Wine magazine among smut banned from the New Jersey prison system. This article comes from the NY Post. These are grapes of wrath. The glossy magazine Wine Spectator was banned from the New Jersey State Prison along with a list of smutty rags. And prison right advocates are sour over the baffling censorship. The food and drink publication was blacklisted along with porn mags such as Hustler, Booty, D-Cup, and All State Prisons. The Wine Spectator revealed Thursday... What?
Booty.
Are you making that up or is that real?
That is, it must be real. It's in the NY Post.
Booty and
wow.
D-cup.
D-cup?
D-cup. But in All State Prisons, the Wine Spectator revealed Thursday in his column Uncorked. The American Civil Liberties Union, which is fresh on the heels of a fight over a banned book about incarceration, says it's a violation of the inmates' First Amendment rights, according to thedrinkbusiness.com. The controversy was first uncorked during a campaign to reverse a ban on the book The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in an Age of Colorblindness in New Jersey Prisons, the Beverage News site report. During the battle, ACLU demanded a list of all publications forbidden by the New Jersey Department of Corrections and discovered that it included the innocuous Wine Mag, which was apparently misspelled Wine Spectacular, according to the website. The book 50 Shades of Grey and the erotic magazine Black Dolls XXL were also forbidden, according to the site. Prison officials refused to say why the Wine magazine was on the list of banned publications, but added it was under review, according to the Wine Spectator. The ACLU plans to fight the New Jersey prison officials over the ban, and Peter Parker Robert says that this gets to 4 thumbs down. So, have y'all ever heard of D cup or booty? No.
I haven't. Have y'all?
I have not, sadly.
Sadly? I'm not sure if that's normally the words following it. And honestly, it makes me wonder, does the magazine industry really exist just for prison now?
Well, I mean, if they lose their rights to the internet, I guess, yeah, right? No?
Well, I'm pretty sure they have internet, but it's already all blocked. It's, like, super censored compared to, like, even elementary schools from what I've heard, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just thinking, like, how many people still order magazines?
I don't.
It's so, like, outside of, I'm trying to think of the magazines that I purchased in the last year. They all have to do with the Houston Astros winning a championship.
But ESPN, the mag, and then I get that one for being a tech club member, like the travel, club travel.
Oh, I
magazine.
Okay, that
yeah,
one.
We get
okay.
that.
And that's it. Those are the only two I get.
Well,
so.
But then I also get, well, because we get the Costco one and just the random stuff that's.
But I mean, like the regular mag.
Oh,
magazines,
the regular?
The Jet magazines.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think. Probably 5 years ago? No, more than that. 7 years ago? Somehow I got roped into getting some magazines, so like random.
You answered a door salesperson.
No, it was something I signed up for. I don't know how I got roped into it, but yeah. And so then they started going to the house, and my stepdad was like, what? The magazines are coming to the house. Because
was it
wasn't like some, no, it wasn't like some, it was like some of them were men magazines. And I'm like, he's like, well, where did this come from? And then there would be some women magazines. And he was like, okay, what'd you sign up for? I was like, I need to cancel it, but I don't know how.
I'm on some kind of crazy mailing list, and one is I get a Jewish magazine in my mailbox once a month, and also in my Yahoo Mail, which is my junk, like if I sign up for things or there's something and somebody wants, it's just like, I'll give you my junk email, which is my Yahoo address, but I would get like 5 emails a day from like Jewish Times or Jewish Council. I'm like, does anybody know that I'm not Jewish? Like, what is getting all this stuff? I'm not mad, but I'm just very perplexed about how this is all going down. Also, last year at some point, I was getting Ebony magazine, which is fine, but again, it's like, how there's some beautiful people in there. Like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm getting an Ebony magazine.
That's what it was. I was like thinking, it's the GQ. Well, that's a men's magazine, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I would get those.
Occasionally buy a magazine. Today, actually. Today, I bought a magazine, but I don't usually do subscriptions. But I bought a Time magazine today because the title of it was Optimist, and there was a 5-year-old. I haven't had time to read it. I just bought it while I was out because I was getting some energy drinks for me and the team for this weekend, and I was standing in line, and I was like, oh, Optimist. And I love positive uplifting things, so I bought the magazine. I haven't read it yet, though.
I think your daycares buy magazines, because...
I thought daycares just got donated magazines.
Well, maybe that's too, because I walk in, and Christopher's like, they're looking at these magazines and cutting the whatever out and putting it, you know...
Cutting the eyes out of the pictures and wearing them in his mask.
Well, last time he's like showing me, and it's like this big, thick, it kind of reminded me of that, those big, thick magazines that you have, the ones that you order supplies and stuff.
Uline?
No, I think it comes to the...
Like East Bay for shoes?
Like you can order like boxes and papers.
Yeah, Uline.
Uline. Okay, I don't know what it's called. I just know that that's what they were looking at. And I'm like, is my son learning anything?
Oh.
And she was like, oh, it's playtime. I was like, oh, okay.
He's learning how much does a box of paper cost.
When they were just flipping through it, him and the other kids, and they all had different magazines, but yeah, maybe you're right. It's probably donated stuff. But
it's definitely
still.
Donated.
Still. But doctor's offices... They get magazines.
Sure.
You're right. Yeah. But I imagine that has even gone down a lot with people having their phones.
That's true.
It used to be doctor's offices had like 6 or 7 subscriptions that they would bring in. And now there's always a Sports Illustrated. There's always like a Time or a Newsweek. And then there's like a US Weekly or In Touch or one of those magazines. Mm-hmm. But you never
Southern Living, I see a lot.
Southern Living, or Texas Monthly in Texas offices.
Or Texas Monthly, yeah.
Texas Monthly. If you're going to be buying a magazine and you run a business in Texas, you might as well have Texas Monthly.
Mm-hmm. And that little kids magazine?
Highlights?
Highlights, yeah. I've seen those.
Are those still exist?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen those.
I imagine by now they could just recycle the material from like 3 decades ago.
Oh, yeah. Put it with nub in there. D or D cup.
Or booty. So.
Mine's spectacular.
I wonder, you know, that means that some prisoner argued with them. It was like, no, but this is Wine Spectator. Like, I don't read that Wine Spectacular. That's smut. Send that back to cell block D. And give me my
that
Wine
just
Spectator.
Makes me think of, they make wine in the, I know, it's probably gross. Make wine in the toilet or something. Is that something?
Do you think they submit any of their creations?
Maybe. Who knows?
They request the wine rider to come to the prison. I request your presence here on February 25th. While am I here? I have something I want you to taste.
I feel like we've watched way too much.
This is the Orange is the New
prison.
Black.
Yeah.
This is definitely Orange is the New Black. They would try to pull this off, and this would make sense in the storylines they actually use. If they're just going to go full comedy route and have a wine tasting in the prison. And so, well, in other news, advertising works. Science Daily published an article, College Branding Makes Beer More Salient to Undergrad Students. The Association of Psychological Science indicate their summary is major beer companies have rolled marketing campaigns and products such as fan cans, store displays, and billboard ads that pair with university colors, mascots, and logos. Research shows that such campaigns may enhance the motivational significance of marketed beer brands, especially for students who identify strongly with the university. The researchers conclude that this effect could potentially lead to increased underage student alcohol consumption. Someone got to study this?
Yes. Obviously. You can study about anything.
I feel
you know what I keep saying? We should We should be applying for grants to do studies.
We should be applying for grants. Like, I was actually reading, this reminds me of an interview that I listened to on Farnham Street Blogs. I'm not sure if anybody else listens to it, but it's a pretty good podcast, and they just interview, like, really successful people. One of them was Rory Sutherland, who's the vice chairman of a big advertising and marketing firm. And one thing stood out to me is he said, he was like, yeah, like, all I do is go and ask researchers what are studies that they can't prove, but I know that there's segments that I could pull out of that and use it for advertising. He was like, sure, you can't prove 2 out of 5 people do this. Do you have really heavy evidence that it might happen? Because I could use that to advertise to those 2 or 5 people. So this seems like one of those obvious things that it's intuitive, but they couldn't prove it until now. But of course, like, that's why all these major brands are trying to fight for the Texas Tech logo every year to get it on. Like, I wonder how much Enchanted Rock Vodka has to pay Texas Tech to use that logo every year. No, it definitely matters.
Sure.
And so, any opinion on it, Mike?
No opinion. Just fighting with iTunes right now. So.
Still uploading your reviews?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get it up. So. Oh, wait. No, that sounded bad. trying to get it.
I cannot help myself.
The official name of my podcast is Assume You Know Nothing.
Hey, that's a pretty cool name.
I like it.
Assume You Know Nothing.
I've been using that phrase for years. I just kind of forgot about it until now. So
I really like that. That's awesome. So let us know when it's up. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. We'll see. I might delete it tonight.
Get it up.
If not, it seems like there's a plethora of extra magazines in New Jersey.
Yeah, otherwise they're just all going straight to landfills, huh?
Under NFL stadiums, which the audience won't get because that part wasn't recorded. But speaking of stuff that people won't get, shipment of molasses begins to turn into rum. Rum and sea travel is supposed to be a good thing, at least if we take our pal Captain Jack Sparrow's always logical and reasonable advice. But maybe not so much this time, since a bunch of molasses casually started turning into rum in the cargo hold of a ship in Houston, knocking a worker unconscious. The ABC 13 in Houston reports that ship cargo hold carrying molasses started to ferment, trapping a worker on Thursday morning. The fermentation made a hazardous environment, the Houston Fire Department told ABC 13, and a crew had to go in after the unconscious worker. ABC 13 has video of the rescue that you could view on their website. The story didn't exactly say how much of the ship's cargo began turning into rum, but says the person was made unconscious by it, regaining consciousness when he went to a nearby hospital. For the sake of the worker, hopefully the incident reports allows for more than just the word rum in the cause section. Maybe it's better if the rum is gone after all, Jack. I kind of don't want to see the video because I'm hoping that he fell in. And when he was like, I'm trying to get out of the molasses, he went under and drank some. He was like, oh, God, this is stout. But I know that's not what happened. Who pays for that?
Insurance company, right?
Because the molasses is going to be in barrels, right?
It sounds like this is just in a big hold. Like, I thought it would be sent in barrels or a huge bladder, but this sounds like it's almost more open air than traditionally for it to ferment and somebody to fall into.
It probably wasn't packaged correctly.
No, honestly,
Did they say he fell into it?
Let me go to the ABC side to get some more clarification. But go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Well, while you're doing that, we'll talk about the other thing. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, the coconut rum place that is right up the road, right behind Pedro's Tamales and stuff, like, he's got an open-air fermenter for his molasses and everything.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's not, I'm trying to think of, like, okay, Christy will probably know this reference better, but you know the gondolas that we use?
Yeah.
At Yano? Okay, imagine if they were squared off, though.
Sure. But when he says gondola, for people listening, he's not talking about a boat.
No, I'm on a boat. Sorry.
With your flippy floppies, but I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, it's like a big metal container that that we get the grapes from the vineyard to the winery and stuff. But just imagine it's more squared off and like, but deeper. Like, it was probably at least as tall as me. But if I'd wanted to, I could have just like kind of slid into it because it's got kind of like a little chute like those gondolas do. Yeah. I mean, it would smell terrible. I wouldn't want to go in there, but.
But also a part of the fermentation, I don't know about other processes. I don't know about distilleries or beer. I know the process, but I don't know from a personal experience, but I know wine from a personal experience. And part of the fermentation process is an emission of CO2. So during those times, if you're touring wineries, there are safety precautions the employees know about. You have to have a certain amount of oxygen. So it would be easy to be unconscious if it was emitting those things at a higher rate. And you just need oxygen. You have to have oxygen to breathe. I mean, or you pass out.
Now, I agree. Looking at it, it looks like it's in open containers because the rescuer's gear is covered in molasses. And the article indicates they're going to have to throw it all away, that they can't even clean it.
Yeah, it looks really sticky and thick.
It's very difficult to clean.
Wait, that doesn't get... that's what she said?
That's where you draw the line, Christy?
No, I was just really thinking about in my lifetime, I have cleaned a molasses barrel before. My dad, I don't know how he procured this, but he somehow came across a metal barrel. And my dad is extremely handy, and he wanted to make a barbecue grill out of it. And he did, but my job was to clean. It was an empty barrel of molasses, but used to have molasses in it. So I first had to clean the molasses. It was the dirtiest, stickiest job. And yes, that's what I said, and I'm a shitty.
I'm sorry,
all the time we're talking about this, I'm just recalling back to my day in high school when I had to clean out that stupid molasses barrel. It was so gross.
And so how do you clean it out? Like, did you have to use chemicals? Because I assume water just doesn't work when it's molasses lining a barrel.
There were lots of cups.
Like drinking like cups?
Like scraping it out. But back then, the plastic cups were the big deal.
Okay.
Like, there was a certain time in the 90s where you got plastic cups everywhere. Whatever fast food, whatever ounces of soda you were drinking from stores. Yeah, so just scraping lots of that out. And then but you had to scrape as much out as possible to get as clean as you can. Yeah, because water doesn't really do it. But eventually, what ultimately cleaned the last of it was fire. But he needed to cut the barrel and make it since he was making a grill. So, anyway.
Okay.
But there was lots of cleaning between that. Yeah, and it wasn't chemicals. It was just manual labor. So I guess that's what you have teenagers for. You have kids so they can clean things for you.
So you can complete your hobbies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how did the grill cook once he finished it?
It was really great. When my dad started really getting into grilling, now he builds smokers and he builds amazing ones. And he, like, now with the internet and YouTube and Barbecue U and whatnot, my dad is a master.
Does he build electric smokers too? Because I'm trying to buy an electric powered smoker that uses wood chips.
No, he's the meat snob. He's a full out meat snob now.
Yeah, I know it's cheating. I don't care.
I get it. I totally get it. I don't mind cooking on propane. But I also understand, like, that's where my dad's really passionate. So I think it's really cool. And he builds big smokers. You know how at the Hub City Barbecue there's some crazy awesome looking things? He does stuff like that now. But again, he's extremely handy and...
Okay.
If you can read, you can do anything. Go, Dad.
All right. Well, speaking of something I didn't realize was disgusting, but possibly is, are sprouts.
Why are they disgusting?
You know,
really?
You know how sprouts have been recalled more than 30 times over the last 20 years, including this time by Jimmy John's. This article was published 6 hours ago on Business Insider.
What is Jimmy John's? What are they using sprouts on?
Everything.
Yeah, they have.
They just throw it on
the
everything.
Their veggie one.
Yeah, they don't use lettuce. They use sprouts. Yeah, they're like, oh, you want meat, cheese? Here's some sprouts.
Yeah. You don't like that.
No.
Yeah, I usually get the veggie sub, and so it has sprouts in it. But I haven't had Jimmy John's in a while, so keep going.
Well, Jimmy John's is being forced to cut sprouts from the menu, which they use on every single sandwich, after a food poisoning outbreak. Here's why an expert never eats the vegetable. Jimmy John is being asked to cut it from the menu after the outbreak. The Illinois Department of Public Health has asked the sandwich chain to stop serving alfalfa sprouts in the state until an investigation of a recent salmonella food poisoning outbreak is complete. So far, two people have reported becoming ill after eating Jimmy John's in late December. Jimmy John's announced on today that it is directed all locations across the U.S. to stop serving sprouts as a precautionary measure. While many types of fresh produce carry risk of spreading bacteria that aren't properly clean, sprouts are particularly risky because they need warm and humid conditions to grow, just like bacteria. According to the government food safety website, there have been at least 30 food poisoning outbreaks linked to sprouts since 1996. According to Bill Marler, a food poisoning attorney with 2 decades of experience, sprouts are a top item that he has banned from his diet. There's just been too many outbreaks to not pay attention to the risk of sprout contamination.
Good to know.
So, yeah, I didn't realize it. Sprouts, they're just more annoying than anything because they have those, like, little stringy things that get stuck in your teeth. And it's not like Jimmy John's comes with toothpicks. So if you eat it at work, now you got little white things hanging from your teeth and it looks like an old man hair just sticking out or something.
I don't think I've ever had that much difficulty just eating
Yeah, somebody understands me out there in the sprouts world. I'm most impressed that there's a food poisoning attorney.
Really?
That's his specialty.
Food poisoning attorney. Well,
do you think there's any out of Texas Tech, Mike? Do you know?
I think if he had a badge, I'd just put the icing on the cake.
Okay, I do know part of the agricultural sciences department stuff is food safety. So I'm pretty sure they do. In fact, I mean, I know the winery just got hit up by the FDA before I left and everything for their, like, every other year, you know, get a inspection and stuff like that. So it came out of Tech, I think. So.
Okay. Well, that's comforting to know that. The FDA still exists, and they're still doing inspections of food and drug places.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, yeah, be careful around sprouts. Don't eat them. Not if you don't have to, because you'll catch salmonella.
Sprouts.
sprouts. All right. Well, we were speaking of expensive drinks earlier, before the show started. Mike and I last week we discussed drinks that we would pay extra money to get an opportunity for, and some of the recommendations extended to the Louis VIII brandy, some was wine. I think this qualifies as the most expensive purposely made drink to ever exist. And it was stolen previously. I just lost the article. I'm sorry. It was the most expensive bottle was stolen just a couple of months ago and from a Copenhagen bar and has been recovered drained of its contents, according to Danish police reports. The Russo Baltique vodka, which is worth $1.3 million and made with 3 kilograms of gold, which is 6.6 pounds of gold, and an equal amount of silver, was reported stolen from the bar in Copenhagen. Police investigators told the Associated Press the vodka bottle was closed with the diamond-encrusted cap, and a person reported finding the valuable vodka at a construction site in Copenhagen. Cafe 33 owner Brian Ingeberg said he received a call from a person who remained unidentified. The vodka bottle was uninsured and loaned from a Russian businessman. The Ingeberg's bar holds about 1,200 bottles of vodka. Nothing else was stolen. The police said the bottle remains intact, though it was found empty.
Okay.
And so, I think that for $1.3 million, you could pay someone a $10,000 and be like, just steal me the contents. I already have the bottle. I just want to fill up the one I already drank.
Yeah.
And get it out of bargain.
Damn, I wish.
How rich do you have to be for $1.3 not to matter to you? Like, you got to be like Jeff Bezos rich. Like,
I don't even know who Jeff Bezos is.
Yes, you do. He's the owner of Amazon.
Oh.
I was going to say, you might be about to know
him. Okay, but I didn't know that until right now. Yeah, because Austin's in the top three.
Yeah. Well, top 20.
They're not going to come to Austin. Everybody's talking about top three. They're going to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, that's
I'll put money on Atlanta.
I'm thinking Atlanta as well.
From kind of what I've studied on this, one of their big things is infrastructure, and I'm just going to say this
Austin
about
doesn't
Austin.
Have it.
Austin, has one of the worst infrastructures and stuff ever, to where they have to actually be like maybe 30 miles outside of Austin for it to even make sense. So Dallas made a little bit of sense, but I mean ATL is kind of where it should be at, right? So
yeah.
And the mayor of Atlanta is really big on bringing in businesses. He works really hard. The airport is really well. As a city, they're doing some really great things. So, you go Atlanta. Your mayor's kicking butt.
Yeah,
they deserve to get Amazon.
Isn't Atlanta's airport the world's largest airport?
It's not the largest airport, but it's the most traveled.
Oh, okay. And so, like, I think that matters.
More people come in and out of that than any other airport in the United States. There are bigger airports. DFW is bigger. DFW is the second largest. JFK is the first. I don't know where Atlanta stands, but the most people actually go in and out of Atlanta.
And I think that you also have the opportunity that you have two major airline hubs coming out of there. That airport's always expanding. Being Atlanta, you're only, 2 hours from the coast? So you're 2 hours from a major port if you're getting anything shipped from there. And the weather's not horrid in the winter. You might get 2 frozen days. And I feel with Dallas, you're going to get all your trucks hailed on every year, like 4 times.
Maybe some tornadoes.
Yeah, some tornadoes, some hail. You're absolutely right. So I'm putting my money on Atlanta. What are your thoughts on it, since you're the tech person, Cassie?
I don't don't know.
Because what we're talking about, if the audience is unaware, this is Amazon chooses the 20 finalists for the second headquarters, which they've been looking for this for the entire last 2 years. They didn't put them in a particular order, even though Chrissy put Austin in the top three, which is very nice of her, as she never claims Austin until she wants to put him in the top three. Otherwise,
I didn't claim Austin. Georgetown. You said I agreed the infrastructure in Austin is terrible. Somebody said you should put them 30 minutes away from Austin. I said Georgetown would be great. However, I have only been listening to other people talk, so I thought they were already in the top three. I thought they were on the shorter list than the top three because of conversations I've had with people that I know. I hadn't read anything. So I'm not presuming that. I'm just sharing what I've heard from other people.
I feel like Austin people are overly optimistic because Austin is Austin. And so
probably.
And the list was done alphabetically, so technically, yes, Austin is in the top
three. I didn't even think about that.
So, yes.
Well, there you go.
They're technically right, so that's my fault, audience. I'm sorry for being so short.
I don't even know the top 20. I thought the top three, here's what I heard, that it was a top three, and that they were Austin, Dallas, and Atlanta. From just hearing that from someone else, I immediately thought Atlanta.
Yeah. Other ones that are on the list that are probably an automatic no-go, Indianapolis, Indiana, too cold for most of the year. Columbus, Ohio, definitely too much snow. Nashville, Tennessee, no. But Nashville, Tennessee is actually an option. Newark,
I can see that, actually. I can see that city.
Yeah, I can see Nashville. And that, now that I say it out loud, Nashville makes sense, just its position on the East Coast. Newark, New Jersey makes no sense. There's no space there. New York City, not going to happen. North Virginia, I think the real estate's too expensive there. That's basically D.C. Philadelphia smells like pee. Pittsburgh... It's not really a hub for anything. Raleigh, North Carolina, as awesome as that city is, I don't think it'll work there. And then Toronto, Ontario, I thought they would go there, but it's just too cold. And then Washington, D.C., that's definitely not happening. There ain't no land there.
Whatever location they decide to place or get, I mean, their data center must be... gonna be huge, and yeah. It's got to be in those locations as well. So, like, I would say they would have to pick two places.
Yeah,
out of that list.
It's gonna be more than two places.
Well, I know it's gonna be more than two places, but you know, because then they would have to have like a disaster recovery location, and then they have to have their actual location. So they're actually picking like at least, I don't know, maybe up to seven.
Yeah, I was just thinking they just have to build like an entire campus, like any other company does. Theirs
would
just be bigger
because
they store so much stuff.
I mean, all of those cities are major cities, but if they're wanting to take it away from the West Coast, guess what? Guess we're all. Google.
Yeah, it's already... they're going to keep the location on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So they're keeping the Seattle location.
Oh, okay.
And they just wanted to open up a secondary location.
Shoot, come to Texas. not Austin, but maybe Dallas.
I do think your workers would be happier in Texas or Florida, where there's no state income
correct.
Tax.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
Hint, hint.
Well, I think including the infrastructure talk, the other part of it included infrastructure was kind of what Cassie's alluding to, like the ability to access technological servers in the area. And, like, you know, obviously they're going to have to build their own server farms and stuff. But I can't think of any city in Texas that's, like, super high tech or that – is like really embraced fiber because the Austin cable companies are so entrenched here.
Austin has a
Has fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know they have it, but it's not a major. It's not their biggest. It's not. It's not the most used. Internet.
No, yes, not the most used.
Yeah, and it's not as big as it is in other cities and stuff. So.
And they're pretty cool because. I've seen pictures where it's like all white in there because a lot of your equipment's all black. It's like, and when you go into these places, it's like, okay, what cord are we looking at? I don't know. I can't tell where it's going. So the interior is all white, and you can also get like racks that are all white as well. And
rack
so
city.
Then,
rack city.
racks.
So when you're setting up your stuff, you know, you can see all the wires and kind of, and it makes the room a lot brighter instead of, you know, whenever you see it, they're like, oh, here is the server room and it's all dark and it's got like little lights coming on. It's like, ooh, but no, I need to see in there.
The more that I talk about it, I think it's between Nashville and Atlanta.
I gotta say something. I was speaking positively about the mayor of Atlanta, but I looked it up because I couldn't remember his name, but I've read several articles. Seemed really impressive. A lot of it is I've traveled to Atlanta a couple of times last year as a hub. And the man who I was speaking about was, I might mispronounce his name. I'm going to assume it's Kasim Reed. Could be Kasim. K-A-S-I-M. Reed. But he's not there anymore. They have a new, mayor. And it's a woman, a black woman at that. I love Atlanta. Her name is Keisha Lance. So I don't know about her, but he endorsed her, so hopefully she'll be as great as he was.
Okay.
But I don't know how she leads, and I don't know anything about her.
Do you think she subscribes to Ebony? I'm just
Well,
asking.
I do, apparently. I don't know. But I love it because it's a little more... I feel like this probably is a weird thing to say. I don't know, but it's me, and I love that Atlanta has a lot more diversity, and they're picking diverse leaders. I don't know if that's too PC, but you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
You have people that are representing you. I feel like it's good. And especially when they're so successful at it.
Yeah, it's definitely still that growing city. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And wait till Andre 3000 becomes the mayor.
Well, then I'm moving there for sure.
Well, I guess... we'll do a little drunk logic, then the entertainment segment that we haven't recorded at all today.
And we got to tell everybody what we drank this week.
Oh, yes. We do have to tell everybody. So, before drunk logic, what have you drank this week, Mike?
All right. So, I had a couple new items. First was Ballast Point Grapefruit and everything. For those of you who have not had it. Tastes like grapefruit. It's a beer. Yay, I guess. Pretty exciting.
Okay.
As it were. Had that at Alamo Draft House because that's where I went and saw the Disaster Artist and everything. We'll get into that here in just a second. My second drink was called a Triple Axel with a Twist. It was it's actually at Alamo Draft House once again. And everything, and it's one of their drinks that they have created in honor of the I, Tonya movie coming out, which I hate to say it, I kind of want to see now, but we'll get into that. I'll review that eventually whenever I do see it, whenever it comes to the theaters here in Lubbock. But a Triple Axel with a Twist, it is Sorry, I'm pulling up my notes. Where was it? Okay, and I completely lost what it was. It's sparkling wine. It is Cocchi Americano and elderflower liqueur with a lemon twist. So.
And do they beat your knee?
I don't know, but they've got some interesting interesting.
Comes with a metal straw.
pretty much, yeah. Yeah, sparkling wine, Cocchi Americano, and elderflower liqueur. Yeah, that's exactly what it was in it. So,
I got to learn how to use elderflower better. I have it, but I've never been able to use it correctly. And so, maybe I'll try that recipe that you just had.
I don't know. It's the only thing I ever know about it is that it was what they made fun of them on Monty Python, you know, Holy Grail movie and stuff. So your mother stinks of elderflower.
I didn't even remember that aspect. And so, but yeah, that's a real rare one. And I also want to see I, Tanya. All I hear is good things about it. And so,
I mean, it was written by her, so that's where I'm. That's kind of what I'm interested about. So
they said it was written
by
Nancy. Poor Nancy, but I'm happy that the people around Tanya were incompetent, and Nancy was still able to compete and become one of the most recognized figure skaters ever. Like, she was the most recognized.
But she didn't win.
But she got silver.
She ain't got a movie.
No, but she has a 30 for 30. No, you're right, okay. Though. Tanya Harding ends up with the movie, even though she's never able to compete or coach or do anything in ice skating again. And so, what did you drink this week, Chrissy?
Oh, man. We had our company employee appreciation event, and I drank some things. There was champagne at my actual management meeting that our owners bought for us, so that was new. I don't know what it was, because they just came at a break and brought us champagne, and so that was fun. And then I had a dry brute at a cocktail... pre-cocktail hour. I don't know what it was. She said she didn't speak English well. She said Prosecco or Brut. I said Brut, so that was fine. And then, and the hotel we were staying at was the Valencia in San Antonio on the Riverwalk. And probably my favorite thing that I drank is because I don't drink a lot of cocktails, but a couple of people had some old fashions that they were raving about, and so I had one, and even though I never had an old fashioned before, it was amazing. And it had the biggest square ice cube I've ever seen. It was like the size of my fist.
Wow.
It was very good. And then we had some Gruet at the actual cocktail hour before the dinner. And then at the dinner, we had a Chateauneuf du Pape and also some California Cab. There was lots of drinking. I don't remember what it was called. I'm very sorry. So I drank some really fabulous things, but I don't really know what they were.
Well, I'm happy y'all had some really good, enjoyable drinks. I was a bit under the weather this week and tried nothing new, drank nothing impressive but water and lots of orange juice.
None of the cocktails for getting over being sick from last week?
No, they didn't even have the heart to make a cocktail. I just stayed in the bed as long as I could. Like, got up, took care of Christopher, went back to sleep as soon as I could make Christopher go back to sleep. But Yeah, so I didn't really get a chance. Maybe I'll try tonight, since I'm still technically under the weather, and see if I could try any of the cocktails that aren't named Hot Toddy, and see how they are. I should have enough in the liquor cabinet to try something.
I would just like for you to gargle vodka for 20 minutes.
20 seconds.
I'll do the 20 seconds and not go with the error that I originally mentioned last week.
I know, but I can't help myself because I was so confused. I was like, why are we gargling anything for 20 minutes? It's still cracking me up.
I completely forgot about it till you brought it up. Thanks for rubbing it in. But I'll try to gargle that even though my throat doesn't hurt. Christopher said his throat hurts. You think? No.
No.
Okay. No. All right, Cassie.
I didn't have anything either because I was afraid that y'all were going to get me sick. So I had water and orange juice and what else? Well, some apple juice in there. Some V8. But, yeah, I was... and I was Lysoling everything.
It's like, walking around in hazmat suits in the
and
house.
It's just like, don't come close. I can't afford more PTO.
Yeah, as we record this, she's sitting in the kitchen, and I'm sitting in the office.
So, anyways.
Oh. All right. And, so I guess we'll go to a little drunk logic because it doesn't make sense, but it's because they're drunk. And this story is the winner of this one. Have you ever been so messed up that you've gone to an ATM, took out about $200, rolled it up and ate it like a burrito? Me neither. But 28-year-old Douglas Francisco came pretty close when he was found passed out in his Hyundai blocking the drive-thru lane at the Bank of America. He tried to order a burrito thinking the bank was a Taco Bell. The Spring Hill, Florida, of course Florida, proved very hard to awaken with the bank manager pounding on the window for a good length of time before he woke up and ordered a burrito from the bank manager. In a move all too indicative of the lack of true customer service at the modern banks, the bank manager didn't even try to make the man a burrito with whatever he could scrounge in the break room, but simply informed the man he was at a bank and not Taco Bell. Francisco then drove off, which was not a great idea given his condition, but he didn't get too far when the police found him in the parking lot with this Hyundai still running. When the police questioned him, deputies reported that he made several statements that were differing with reality, which isn't shocking coming from someone who just tried to order a burrito supreme from Bank of America. Police found oxycodone, Xanax on the driver, and both were prescribed to Francisco. Since he demonstrated signs of being under the influence of narcotics, he was charged with the DUI. This should be a wake-up call to Bank of America, who really should offer some burrito options to their customer. It'd save a lot of time if you could just convert your money right into burritos at the ATM and cut out the middleman.
See, if he had his dog, he probably would get at least gotten a dog treat.
Very true. You're always the optimist. That's beautiful. And that's the drunk logic for this week. And in entertainment this week, Mike indicated that you've seen a couple of movies as well as the launch of your new podcast. Take the floor.
Okay. Well, I went and saw The Post, and I went and saw The Disaster Artist. Post was an excellent movie with amazing acting. I think anytime you've got Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, the two of the best actors in their generation and stuff, and then Steven Spielberg behind the camera and John Williams doing the score, which I forgot to mention in the first time I talked about it. It was an amazing movie. The only thing I kind of knocked it down for was a couple of the set pieces, some of the sound decisions, but the acting was top notch. The directing was top notch, and the story was pretty interesting without too much tension. Let's put it that way and stuff. The other one that I went and saw was The Disaster Artist, starring James Franco and his brother. Basically, it's a film about the worst movie ever made. I'm going to review this one next week on my blog and my podcast and everything, but ultimately, only gave it like a 5 out of 10. It was more funny than anything else, and it was just kind of an average funny movie, but after watching The Room and then seeing James Franco pretty much beat for beat, I can understand why he's, like, you know, getting awards consideration and things like that. In addition to those two movies, I also watched Schindler's List, I watched 500 Days of Summer, and Layer Cake, all reviews that are going to get posted sometime in the next week. Also, I forgot to mention, I did finish watching the end of the, I guess this is our one swear word, The End of the Fucking World on Netflix, and that's an effed up show. For sure, I think everybody needs to not watch it, especially anybody sensitive about animal violence. Definitely parents, don't let your kids watch that, you know, like little Chris or anybody like that. But it's kind of funny. It does have some moments, but it's kind of, it's more British funny than American funny. So.
Okay. And Cassie, what have you watched?
Black Mirror.
Okay. And so what season are you on in the Black Mirror?
I am on season 3. So, I just finished watching an episode about some kind of game, realistic 3D gaming, and so they put a chip in the back of his head, and he's seeing stuff, and, but it's pretty cool, I like it, but yeah, as far as the rest of the episodes, like, I'm getting into it, I didn't realize it was so short, like, the seasons. There's just like a couple of
episodes. Yeah, 3 or 4 episode seasons. Yeah, it's not much.
I was like, okay, I'm getting ready. And then I finally look at it and I was like, wait, there's only like 3? Dang, okay. That's no wonder I'm flying through this. Or no, now it's on 4, right? So, anyways, yeah, and that's it.
Yeah, you could conceivably watch the entire series in a day, I think.
Yeah, I'll probably finish it this weekend.
Okay. Christy, did you watch anything or read anything new this week?
No, I've been very boring. I finished the Trevor Noah book. It was actually very fascinating. Learned a lot about him. Very impressed with his upbringing. I feel like I love human interest. It's my very favorite thing. And I love Audibles, and he narrated his own book, so it was interesting listening to the accent. He speaks 6 different languages, doesn't think it's a big deal. He feels like an underachiever because his mother speaks 9. Just what he grew up in, and to be able to have that sense of humor and be super successful is really inspiring, so I highly recommend Born a Crime. But yeah, I just finished listening to that this week. Nothing new, and I didn't watch anything.
Okay. This week I was out being sick, so I watched a lot of things in between. I finally caught up and was able to see Lethal Weapon 1 and 2. I watched I Like Killing Flies Again, which Mike informed me is also on YouTube, so I didn't have to purchase it directly from Netflix to watch. But now I own it. If anybody wants to watch it, there's that opportunity. I did also buy Hunt for the Wilder People and watch that again, as I think that was one of the best movies of last year that I think just missed out on the award season, but should win something this year. And if you haven't seen it, The Hunt for the Wilder People, it's not Wilder People. It's a story about Ricky Baker and the love of a woman named Bella. While the actress who plays Bella isn't the main character of the film, her character is the common string that the movie revolves around. Ricky Baker is an orphan who's been in the system his whole life and wants nothing more to be G'd up from the feet up and a hug or two when he comes home. Growing up in the urban part of New Zealand, he's placed in a home with Bella and Uncle Hector, who live on the rural edge of existence. Shot on location in beautiful New Zealand, you can't help but fall in love with the landscape and the characters as a result. I'm not sure what I imagine the bush looking like, but it wasn't the lush canopies and dense foliage interrupted by a series of rivers, creeks, and waterfalls. It looks like the Lord of the Rings, naturally, as yeah. that's where they recorded it from. It's just absolutely beautiful. But it's a coming-of-age story. They take a journey into the bush to escape from each other, only to realize that they need each other more than ever. So it's a half-coming-of-age movie, half Wes Anderson film, if any of his movies were entertaining. Hunt for the Wilder People should be runaway favorite for the best original screenplay and best photography at this year's Academy Awards, but based on the Golden Globes, I'm really unsure. But I hope that they certainly clean up. I give the movie the highest rating I can on my yet-to-be-developed arbitrary ranking system.
Really?
Yes. It's up there. It's almost past Shada's.
What do you mean? Almost now it's past.
And so, well, that's my entertainment section for... this week, did y'all have anything to add?
In entertainment?
Yes, on entertainment.
Yes, be on the lookout for a post on free drinks next week in the next hour with the official link to the first podcast to Assume You Know Nothing. So,
like, subscribe.
Yes.
Post, if you like it on iTunes, make sure you post a message so it helps it in the ratings and boost it up. Make sure you support it.
Yeah, I guess I gotta start saying all that stuff. It's normally Chris who does, so I gotta get used to that.
Well, were there any stories that since this week I really didn't compile, I guess, an outline until a couple hours before the show. What other news happened this week that I miss?
I think one of the most interesting things I saw all week was, and it's going around on Facebook, it's that Insider Pets, the seatbelt for dogs and everything, where like it sits them upright and stuff. It's like, instead of them being like kind of strapped down to the bottom of the chair, they're strapped into like the seat back. But after watching the crash test dog videos, that is the most depressing thing I think I've ever seen. Dogs being crashed, not real dogs, but like the fake dogs. Human crash test dummies are just hilarious, but dog crash test dummies, no, that's ugly and upsetting. So that's what I'm most excited for this week in media.
I mean, the only story I have, but it was old, and I think I sent it to y'all, and it was posted, what, in 2014, why astronauts were banned from drinking wine in outer space.
Yeah.
Which I read the whole thing, and I was just like, huh. But, you know, if you think about it, I don't know why I thought, I was like thinking of aliens, and they're all sitting in the break room drinking and stuff like that, and then they get chased down by aliens, so that's probably what would happen. I don't know why, it just kind of came to mind, but it's still pretty cool that they actually, you know, went down and tried to figure out, okay, what's the best, what would survive the trip if they went to space. So, and they came up with sherry, but then it like talks about Russia and now they're just like, if it makes it, it makes it. Cheers.
I don't care what it tastes like.
I thought it was an interesting article. Also, I loved Cassie's comment the most. It made my whole day. It actually made me just stop and read the article out loud to people because I was at work and it was alcohol related. It was wine related, so I feel like it was appropriate. Cassie said, but I would like to put space sommelier on my resume. Yes. All of the yeses. Space sommelier. Thank you very much.
Make it happen.
It just sounds cool. It's like,
You're all interviewing for a job, and they're looking. They're like, what?
Well, I'm a space sommelier. How about you? Oh, you're a master somm? I'm sending my wine to space. My recommendations are out of this world.
Yeah.
Okay, and I didn't comment on this part, but I remembered after the fact that even in Star Trek, alcohol is technically banned and everything, and it's called synthol, and it's non-alcoholic. But they're always joking about, like, you know, smuggling Romulan ale in, because that's apparently the stoutest stuff in the entire Federation. So I just thought that was kind of cool, too.
It's probably really only near beer, because they don't have anything to drink. They're like, man, I'm wasted.
But yeah, I was just like, well, yeah, of course they're going to say, no, don't drink. It's like, don't drink and drive. Don't drink and fly.
Don't drink and fly our multi-billion-dollar spacecraft.
You're like, you're going to hook this other.
It wasn't that, though. They wanted them to enjoy it. They just couldn't figure out the packaging.
Yeah, and that's what it was. But, you know, but it's like, wait, you're drinking on the job? Sorry, y'all.
Like, they couldn't figure out a packaging that was going to work because it was going to change.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to different pressures and whatnot.
And that's why I was like, the Russians were like, ah, if it makes it.
Yeah, we're going to try it. Yeah.
Be like, we'll let you know as we taste test it a lot. Hey,
give us all of your samples. How many of them are? All right, that was a good drink. I think I'm going to go for a walk.
And like those, what was it? Those apple.
Yeah.
The Capri, like they kind of remind me of like Capri Suns. Or the applesauce little things that Christopher has for a snack. That's what it kind of reminded me of, just the container portion. Because they're like, I don't know how we're going to do this.
I feel like it should be revisited because. I mean, that was in the 70s. Technology is so much further now.
And I feel like there's some winery that would take that challenge just to be the honor of being, like, the first official wine made for NASA and astronaut consumption.
I feel like some sort of way they probably do. They just don't advertise it.
I was going to say, Yano did the official wine for the 20th anniversary of the moon landing.
Really?
Cool.
Yeah. Well, they've got that poster and everything.
That's awesome. And so that means that it's possible. Mm-hmm. So they need to get an official recognition.
They might not fall enough in outer space to make it worth their time.
Yeah, that's true.
Or
you should just submit your resume and just say space sommelier. Just that's it. That's all you need to put.
Or maybe when they get the Wine Spectator, the jail issue on how to make like toilet wine, they could try that in space.
No. That wouldn't even work because it's. It's like
you just close it up, you pump some oxygen in there to speed up the fermentation.
It's like a vacuum.
Yeah, you close it up on each side, pump some oxygen in there. It's like a reverse, it's a reverse food saver vac where it pushes air in instead of pulling it out, ferments it, open the toilet, and gulp as the bubbles just come up.
No.
Well, this got worse.
Alright. Well, I think that's it.
I think so.
Alright. I would just like to say my last note is the NCAA is still trash. So is Michigan State University. So is U.S. Gymnastics. But I'll leave it there. Mm-hmm. And so, well, thank you for joining Free Drinks Next Week, the number one wine podcast at this address. Free Drinks Next Week brought you weekly conversations about something different. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook. Give us a thumbs up on Stitcher. Like us on Facebook. Leave a review on our iTunes. And I'd like to thank the co-hosts today, and Mike, Cassie, and Chris D. Little Chris did not join us. That's me knocking on wood, making sure he doesn't like bust through like the Kool-Aid man. Hey!